He used to cover Sporting. He used to cover the Chiefs. Now he covers everything. Okay, we get it. He's the columnist for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, only on the program.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we make our way through a very busy Monday. Much to get to. The program proudly brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport. Why the hell not? You're worth it. Get the new or used Harley of your dreams right there, WorthHarleyDavidson.com. You can look them up online. Of course, Bike Night, still rocking and rolling on Thursdays. Check it out. You can check out the event calendar at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. We welcome Sam McDowell, proudly brought to you by our friends at Corona. Sam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Seren. How are you doing?
Spectacular. Bordering on phenomenal. Good to be back in Kansas City and back at work and talking some Royals baseball, talking some Chiefs football. You're up at Chiefs camp. Andy Reid's yanking the offense off the field for false starts. ESPN's getting excited about that. Like, you know, it's time to play a game, right? Are people starting to get a little antsy up there, the fact that they haven't been able to see anybody in a different color jersey yet?
Yeah, I think this is what they would do in a game. I mean, I think if Orlando Brown false starts back-to-back, that he would call timeout and just yank the entire offense off the field. So it's full game prep.
What do you think of Orlando Brown so far?
You know, I don't think he's been the most impressive offensive lineman out here. I really thought, though, you know, just the context of that, I thought he really struggled last year at camp to the point to where I actually texted a couple buddies and I said, I think the Chiefs are going to have a problem at left tackle. And, you know, for the first month, Orlando Brown wasn't great, so maybe there was some indication there. And I thought he got continually better as the year progressed. So I still think that that's a possibility this year for Orlando Brown. And, of course, he did come in late. And not only did he come in late, but he missed the entire – summer workouts. So some of these plays are completely new to Orlando Brown. And I also do think he's a guy that works on very specific techniques, as we heard even Creed Humphrey say today that he uses a lot of these drills for.
I probably should have asked this question today of Curtis and Adam. Has he spoken since coming back to camp?
Yeah, he spoke the day that maybe it was the day after he reported.
Okay. And that was right about the time that I headed out. So what did you make of his of what he had to say?
The words are all right, and I also think that the actions are too. I mean, he does not have to be here in St. Joe, and as glorious of a city as this might be, Seren, I think that if it were me, I would have considered avoiding the trip to live in a dorm for 3 weeks. So he had every opportunity to do that and not lose his starting position. Now, I wrote this. I think that decision would have only been hurting himself because I think he would have been behind. I think he would have been more susceptible to injury. And as important as last year was for him in his introduction to the Chiefs in his first full year at left tackle, he is in a contract year. The way to get more money is to have a really good year. I think Orlando Brown's in a spot where – he's not he doesn't need just to prove he can do it all over again. He needs to prove he can be even better than he was last year if he wants the contract he wants. And his press conference, I thought, all followed that model. He said he knew the importance of training camp for Andy Reid. That's one of the reasons he's out here. I also think him being really good friends with Patrick Mahomes, that probably played a factor in him being out here. So, yeah, I think the words and actions are appropriate, but – at the end of the day, nobody's going to care about that if the guy has a lousy season. So it's still going to come down to what we see on the field.
You used the word might be in reference to the glory of St. Joe. Would you like to amend that?
how many listeners do you have in St. Joe, Sam?
Well, I think quite a few, to be honest with you,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. I figured
because there's a lot of Chiefs gear down here. You know, it's got that small town flavor, so it just kind of depends on, you know, what your personal preferences are.
Full glory for St. Joe, as far as I'm concerned.
Full glory.
Yeah, some of my best friends, the Leddens, live up in St. Joe. Johnny Walker lives outside of St. Joe on his farm outside of St. Joe. Great friends of the program up there. Full glory is what I give to St. Joe. Full glory.
Name a city in, like, you know, within like a 50 to 100 mile radius of Kansas City that you would not classify that.
Let me think.
Just completely dog on some neighbor.
So rip somebody within the listening, you know, within the tower strength of WHB. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, what don't I like? I'm trying to think, where have I had a bad experience? I mean, I guess anyone along the I-70 corridor between – see, it's not really a town as much as it's just I-70 itself. Like, the whole thing sucks. Across the board, I loathe going east on I-70, and it's nothing against St. Louis. I was born in St. Louis. I like St. Louis. Cardinals are my second favorite baseball team. That's not it. I just – it's hell on earth to drive either direction on I-70. So that's about the only negative I have to say about Kansas or Missouri. I was going to say, I just throw on the GPS when driving to Florida, and whatever it tells me is the fastest route is where I go. And so you get an interesting little two-lane winding 60, 70 miles through the southeastern part of Missouri. Didn't leave anything there. No plans to head back. You know, didn't seem to feel like they were missing me when I got back either. So I could probably, the southeast corner of Missouri didn't seem to fancy me a whole lot. Does that count?
The point of this is really to prove that you would not dog on any of your listening areas. And that's really what prompted your words about St. Joe. But, I guess we'll count southeast Missouri. It's not that pleasant of a drive.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, And listen, my mom's from Newton, Kansas. I spent a lot of my childhood going to see relatives in Newton, Kansas. I've been to small, it's not the farming thing or anything like that. I like farming towns, like Farmington, where my buddy Doug Stewart's from. That area down there, that I'm kind of like, Nah, I'm not. But you know what? Probably if I spent some time there. I'll tell you what it was. I went down there. There was a place called, and I'm sure it's a wonderful business, called Dale's Body Shop or Dale's Auto Body. Dale, spelled D-A-I-L. And out in front, it had this little, like, 10x10 structure with these mannequins, these spooky mannequins, like a barber cutting someone's hair in a chair. And it really gave me the creeps, like I was driving through a Stephen King town or something. I don't even know where I was, but it was someplace down there in that southeast part. I don't understand what they were trying to accomplish with that, if that was supposed to be art or what, because it was an auto body shop that had a barber, had a couple of mannequins, spooky-looking mannequins, like a barber shop. That kind of freaked me out. I don't need to be back there.
This is just a riveting commercial for this place, riveting advertisement for this place.
Like I said, probably a wonderful body shop. They just creep me out. I don't know what else I can tell you. If anyone's ever driven that, if you put the Apple Maps on to go to Florida, you're probably going to drive by that. And if that doesn't creep you out a little bit, then, you know, you're probably creepy.
Dale's Body Shop. Fix your car. Creep out your kids.
I mean, I was driving or I would have taken a picture. You know, of course, I was driving on two lanes at 24 miles an hour, because that joy of cutting through some of those towns. But, you know, it's the shortest route. So, yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, I'll leave it with that. All right, so I digress. Back to Orlando Brown. So do you think we're going to see a better version of Orlando Brown, or do you think we're going to see last year's version of Orlando Brown?
I actually do think we'll see a better version, which is also one of the interesting things about this whole situation is a lot of guys when they're entering the final year of their rookie contract, you're pretty sure, like, what you have out of that player. I mean, they're entering their fourth season. You've seen their progress from year one to year two to year three, and therefore you've got a reasonable expectation of at least what you can reasonably expect to have. Orlando Brown's a little bit of a different case because he played his first 2.5 years at or played his first two seasons at right tackle. He's still learning his position. And like I mentioned earlier, there was a difference, I thought, between Orlando Brown in September versus Orlando Brown in December. And therefore, if he showed that he could improve with just experience at that spot, and also, you know, he is in a completely different system. And there's probably no two passing systems more contrasting than the Chiefs and the Ravens. I thought he had a lot to learn, and I thought the improvement could have been a product of simply learning. Therefore, I think maybe he's got some more optimism about making a jump between year three and four than the average guy who might be in the situation, and perhaps that plays a factor in not settling for a contract that he doesn't want.
We're talking to Sam McDowell here in the program. By the way, I want to give you an update. We had a lot of folks come down and get tickets. Are we out? I know we were getting low. Do we have an update? We had about six pairs left. So I don't want people that are driving from far away to keep headed towards 6721 West 121st Street in Overland Park, Kansas, where our office is. And Josh Briscoe is giving out tickets, pairs of tickets, to our WHB Bash, of which Sam McDowell will be in attendance. Looking forward to seeing Sam at the big event on Thursday night. Do we have an update, Adam?
The one I sent you was my most recent, and at that time we had a little more than what you're saying on the air now. So I think they got a pretty huge rush right when it started, so they may have some left, but I don't want to make any promises we can't keep.
If only somebody who wasn't conducting an interview would text Josh Briscoe and find out where we're at. Oh, if only a device that had that kind of technology could be held in your hand and you could get to the bottom of those kind of things. Wouldn't it be amazing? Sam
Curtis
McDowell
is telling you to get on it.
Sam McDowell is with us here in the program as we talk some Chiefs football. And you are confirmed, Sam. You will be part of the festivities, right?
I have been confirmed, yes.
Okay. So the human elf.
I did not know that Josh was gone whenever I confirmed. But, you know, I did call and ask you who was going. You didn't mention Josh Briscoe. You probably thought I was calling to see who would be going. I was kind of more seeing who to avoid. But I have tentatively confirmed.
All of us from the station will be there. Josh is out in the parking lot handing out the tickets right now.
He's literally in the parking lot.
Literally.
Literally in the parking lot.
Literally.
Okay.
In the parking lot at the station 6721. Come on down and pick him up and roll right through as we attempt to confirm. And you know what I love is, like, we're also not getting a text from Josh, so he clearly is listening to the show while he's down there handing out the tickets. Appreciate that as well as we soldier on with, you know, those of us in the room, apparently. We did have a big rush, so lots of people listening, and we appreciate that, and want as many people down there at the event as we can. Sam, are you of the opinion that the offensive line will, as a whole, you mentioned Orlando Brown getting better, that as a whole this offensive line will be even better this year?
Yeah, you know, we were actually mentioning earlier, and Trent, you probably have a take on this too, but with Dick Vermeil going into the Hall of Fame this week, and it reminded me of those Chiefs offenses that he had, which I think the worst offense in the league he had in 5 years was fifth in the NFL. And, you know, of course, you know, Trent Green got a lot of credit, deservedly so. Priest Holmes got a lot of credit, deservedly so. But what always stood out to me was just how incredible that offensive line was. With Willie Rofe and Will Shields and Brian Waters and Wigman and John Tate. And this unit is young enough to where I don't think they're going to get to that level of good, but I do think they could get close. And I think it's at least you could make the argument that they could become the best five-man unit since that group that Dick Vermeil had. And like I said, I know you've covered a lot of these teams. I at least followed the teams, you know, originally going to a lot of the games, and now in this role I have now, to where – you know, there might be a group I'm forgetting, but I think going through those teams, it could eventually become, like I said, maybe at least in the discussion of that group.
Sam McDowell says the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line currently has
Hall of Famers. Here we go.
And an all-pro third player on it right now.
I could not have possibly thrown more qualifiers on there to avoid that response, but I still got it anyway.
Sam, there is no avoiding stuff like that from Sam.
I loved how you knew. You just knew it was coming right at you.
Like halfway through, I was like, what other way could I possibly qualify this? Just so that's not the reply, but it wasn't enough.
That's fantastic. That is just fantastic. Now, I get your point, though. Maybe not the individual. Go ahead.
Yeah, do you think it's let's say this? Do you think it's the best since that group?
Yeah. I think that's a fair statement. I'd have to sit and scroll in my head. But Andy Reid, I think it's one of the reasons. I mean, I love the fact that Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey are super cheap while playing at a high level. Creed Humphrey, and we're going to talk about this even later on when we bring on Amelia Probst from PFF. She's written a piece that basically. What I'm going to tell you, she's got Creed Humphrey based upon his lack of volatility plus his blocking success rate. He charts out even higher than Trent Williams does. Now he's playing center instead of left tackle. I would call center the third most important position on the offensive line, very important position on the offensive line. But, you know, I think they're better at center. I think Creed Humphrey is got a chance to be, like if we say Hall of Famers on this offensive line, you know, Joe Tooney's got a shot because of the Pro Bowls he's being in there. I think Creed Humphrey, I think, number one, there's going to be a wave of why didn't this guy get the award last year, which is going to carry him to the award, to the Pro Bowl this year and maybe even All-Pro this year. I think the voting community is much more in touch with the analytics side, and the analytics love Creed Humphrey all over the place. And I think you could see him rattle off, you know, 6 to 10 Pro Bowls here moving forward and be that guy. Centers kind of get into that spot. Pete Enix talked about this a lot over the years. They get into that spot, and once they have it, it's kind of theirs for a while. And I don't know who's going to knock him off. I think he's sensational. So I think they're better. You know, Casey Wiegman was great, but he's probably better than Casey. He's certainly bigger and more physical and more versatile than Casey, who was a tremendous tactician and, you know, kind of an undersized guy. He may be Will Shields' equal. I don't know, and Joe Tooney, different kind of player, but maybe Brian Waters equal. It's the Willie Rofe part of the equation that they're missing. And Orlando Brown's just not Willie Rofe. He may be good. And that's one of the things Amelia's piece at PFF talks about is, you know, there's a lot of value in just being consistently average. And that's kind of what Orlando Brown is as a tackle. He's consistently average. You know, he'll get beat by some of the best on a speed rush. But overall, he's going to give you what he's got down in, down out, played all but one game last year. And, you know, if you have that with greatness from guard to guard, and Trey Smith was kind of average, but it was as a sixth-round pick and a rookie, a sixth-round pick that hadn't played that much football at Tennessee because of his conditions. If he's going to get more reps, and I think he should just get better and better, then if you put, you know, consistently average it on one side and can find consistently average on the other, because Andrew Wiley doesn't grade there. But if somebody can beat Andrew Wiley out, then yeah, I think it becomes one hell of an offensive line, one that you might have to chip here or there, but one that you can also say, all right, let's roll the dice and let's send five out and let's hope the tackles can hold up on this one. And because, you know, you're going to be fine in the middle. You know, I think Tom Brady might trade for the guard to guard that the Chiefs have got right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so that's what's really intriguing about this comparison is because it's sort of the opposite that the Chiefs had just, 3 years ago? I mean, they were really strong at the tackles with Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, and that consistently average phrase you're talking about would apply to the interior that they had. One note about right tackle, though, you know, yesterday and then some today, Jaron Christian was rotating in with the ones at right tackle. And, you know, I've said this before, but Andy Reid will try and tell us, don't read too much into where guys are playing. But I'm telling you, when you watch training camp, then you watch the preseason games, and then you watch the actual games, it means a lot which unit these guys are playing with. They don't rotate those guys in with the ones for nothing. So I think that is suddenly going to become a camp battle that we're going to be watching over the last 10 days here.
Is whether or not Christian takes down Wiley?
Yeah. I think, you know, and one of the reasons we're watching that is because there's not really a lot of question marks about who's going to be starting. You know, we talked about that on our podcast here at the Star with Jesse and Herbie and Vahe, is there's not like a ton of questions about which players are going to be just starting on week one, you know, injuries notwithstanding. But that could turn into one here over, like I said, over the next 10 days in St. Joe, and then when they break camp and you know, play the final preseason game as well.
All right, we've established that the offensive line is good. One of the big question marks, of course, is that pass rush. That was one of the big topics today. We're going to hear from some of the folks talking about it. How good is the pass rush? Are we talking highly about the offensive line because they're dominating a mediocre pass rush? We'll get Sam McDowell's thoughts on that next here in the program. Sam McDowell, proudly brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and Corona Hard Seltzers. We enjoyed the Corona Hard Seltzers and the Corona Premier quite regularly on the vacation in Florida. You can find them wherever you find your Coronas. Cool.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Two first-year players have had a six RBI game for the Royals. Who are they? And that's first-year players, not just rookies, because some guys have their rookie status into their second and maybe even their third year. Two first-year players, six ribs in a game for the Royals.
Well, MJ Melendez is one.
And that fills in half the banner.
Good rookie seasons, huh? I'll try Bob Hamlin.
2007, Billy Ray Butler.
So not Bob Hamlin, you're saying?
Not a Bob Hamlin.
Okay, I got one of them. I'll take, you know, batting 500. That works,
sure.
Doesn't it?
Would lead the league.
Billy Ray Butler. Ray was his middle name.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Was that just one of those things that legend grew from, because it sounded like it would be his middle name? Let me check here.
It was Billy Ray Butler.
Wikipedia confirms Billy Ray Butler.
Yep.
And you can always trust Wikipedia.
Yes, of course.
That's right.
You know what? Because
ask Strugglesworth.
it was Billy Ray Hamilton as well.
Well, that's right.
And, well, there was kind of an interesting story at winter warm-up one year when I was out there, and Dayton Moore kept referring to him as Billy Ray Hamilton, and so I could not confirm that was his middle name, but Googled it, and it turned out that Billy Ray Hamilton was also the name of a serial killer, so I had to tell Dayton Moore to stop calling him Billy Ray Hamilton.
Really?
I just looked that up. Yes, you're right.
There's also Billy Ray Valentine. Do you know who that is?
I don't.
Anybody? First person to tell me Billy Ray Valentine is without Googling it, Sam, you putz.
No idea.
No, that's what you're doing.
I am the person in among the four who's actually on the phone right now, Saran. So you guys have the access to Google.
I'm sure sitting down at
have we heard from Josh Briscoe, by the way? That's really the only reason.
We do still have tickets.
From the second
we do have tickets. In fact, they've added
Josh
more
Briscoe
tickets.
Is doing his job out in the parking lot? Has he left the parking lot?
He is doing his job in our parking lot, giving away tickets. You can still come to 6721 West 121st Street. That's the parking lot of Sports Radio 810 WHB, where he is giving away pairs of tickets. We got another. It was very popular, and so they went and got some more. They said, okay, they felt bad if people were making the trip over. So keep going. Still tickets to give away, but it will be done at 4 o'clock, whether they're out or not. So get hustling. 6721 West 121st Street if you want tickets. Pairs of tickets to the big event coming up on Thursday night. Take advantage of that right now if you would like. It is in our parking lot as we speak.
I have to add a very important detail to this conversation that you guys were just having. So as we all know, Billy Ray Butler got his nickname from the fans' Country Breakfast. Apparently, the serial killer in question, Billy Ray Hamilton, was nicknamed Country. That felt relevant to me.
Did it?
I'm laughing, yes.
That's a good response.
Yeah. So no one has figured out who Billy Ray Valentine is?
I have not.
He's Eddie Murphy.
Looking good, Lewis.
Oh,
feeling good, Billy Ray.
Trading places.
There
we
go. Valentine. Nice. That was Eddie Murphy's character.
And we had an entire Billy Ray conversation, and no one even once mentioned Achy Breaky Heart, which actually made me happy until then I just spoiled it by doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
I can't be trusted with anything important.
No, you can't. It's just too much. It's too much for you. We know you're a man under tremendous pressure.
Right.
And so we want to try to take some of
the chair I'm sitting in is under tremendous pressure.
Mm-hmm. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue can take some of that pressure away. Don't cook dinner tonight. Get Joe's on the way home. 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, 117th in a row. Always a great option. You want a happy family, grab you some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. For me, I like the Rocket Pig sandwich, fries, rings, short end. That's my go-to. Then I've got two meals out of the deal. Get the fries, get the rings. Get the short end and get the Rocket Pig. You cannot go wrong. My favorite sandwich is the Rocket Pig. The Z-Man gets a lot of love. It's a great sandwich. But the Rocket Pig is better. Sorry, I said it. There it is. Go to Joe's tonight and find out for yourself. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Best barbecue in town. It's at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. 47th Mission, 119th and Strangline in Olathe, and then 117th and Row in Leawood, Kansas. We're talking to Sam McDowell. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona. He's up in St. Joe. Glorious St. Joe, undisputed glory of St. Joe. He is up there. How about the pass rush for the Kansas City Chiefs? Let me let you hear a little bit. I know you heard this earlier today, but this was Andy Reid talking about Chris Jones. He says he's poised to have a big season.
I mean, he's going wild out here every day. Maximum effort. He's in great shape. He's, over the last few years here, he's really dedicated himself to being in tip-top shape and pushing himself. He's a fun-loving guy, but he's learned to kind of funnel that in to when he's on the field, it's all business, and that's how he's gone about it. So he Joe's been good with him and working hard. So he's on pace for a good year.
He's on pace for a good year. He said Joe, and I was already thinking about Chris Jones because we were just talking about Joe's. Chris Jones is the one who told me the trick. He gets, what did he say, Curtis? Two fries, and then he saves the leftovers. He said Joe's fries are amazing when you go to the air fryer, mm-hmm. that you can redo them
yes.
in the air fryer, and they're still really good.
Oh.
That's a Chris Jones tip for you, for our friends, anyone going to Joe's. Go ahead, buy extra fries. It's
yes.
okay. Just rewarm them in the air fryer. But are you seeing the same kind of performance from Chris Jones that we just heard Andy Reid talking about, Sam?
I think Chris Jones annually is always one of the top standout of camps. You know, you're so close to the action that it's just a great reminder of how impossible he is to block one-on-one, especially during literally the one-on-one drills.
Wait a minute. When are you ever actually close to the action? You're on a hill overlooking.
I talk about this every year. People always complain about the view that we have because we do see reporters that from other camps and other cities who are right there on the sideline. First of all, we do get that sideline view when they move indoors, which happened on a day last week. But you actually could move down closer to right behind the action if you wanted to. And second of all, it is a way better view than we have of anything at any point in the season, especially in these NFL press boxes when you might as well have binoculars.
I'm not disputing it's a quality view. I have no problem with where we're set up, although I do remember the days when I could stand right on the sideline, and I miss that. I think there are some things that can be gleaned from being closer. It's a great view. I'm just arguing with you, Sam, when you said the close, view you get, you're not close. It's a good view, but you're not close.
I think you are close enough to see stuff out here that you can't see in the game setting.
All right, I got you. So Chris Jones, is he going to have a big year?
I think Chris Jones is going to have a big year, but I also think that's partly because You know, I think Carlos Dunlap is a better player than what they had at defensive end a year ago. And, you know, I do think that Frank Clark could potentially be slightly better than he was last year. I just think the talent overall around Chris Jones, you know, with Karlaftis there too, I think he's going to have more support on the end, and therefore maybe he doesn't see a double team on 70% of the snaps this year. I think that's more about that. But we know what Chris Jones' ceiling is. I don't feel like he's suddenly going to have another level that we haven't seen in the first 5 years or something of that sort.
Okay. Okay. You know, I think he's going to have a good year because, one, he's back at D-tackle, focusing on defensive tackle, and I think it was a worthwhile experiment last year, but we know he can play great at D-tackle, and getting to spend all his time there at D-tackle I think is going to be big. I think Karlaftis is going to be an upgrade. How big of an upgrade remains to be seen, but I think he will be an upgrade, and that's really the only two reasons I think you would have for to think he would be better this year than last year, right? I mean, you know, he should be. He's not like he's picking up new pass rush moves this far into his career, is it?
Right. I mean, Creed Humphrey did talk about the fact that it's not only the amount of moves that because he goes against him in those one-on-one drills a lot, but it's not only the amount of moves that Chris Jones has, it's that all of them are really good. So, obviously he's so good with his hands. I mean, that's what really separates him as a defensive tackle. But, the production has not exactly matched the talent level over the past three seasons for him. You know, I mean, he's only once had double-digit sacks in a season, and that was in 2018 when he had that.
So, wait a minute. Are you saying that perhaps they should have moved him instead of signing him to the contract extension?
I think that's what you're saying.
You just said that the production hasn't been there. I'm asking you if you're connecting those dots.
That's what you just connected.
I'm asking you, would you connect those dots?
I'm saying you did just connect those dots.
I got it. Yes, I will, because I would not have signed that contract. That's I'm on the record of that 3 years ago of saying that. I'm asking you if you now feel that way.
I don't. I still just think that one of the reasons is because of all the attention he sees. So, if you took that attention away from him and suddenly an offensive line is sitting there thinking, should I double team Frank Clark on this play? I mean, I really don't know how porous this defensive line would be if you subtracted that guy from the equation.
How much better would they be if they had five draft picks for him the way they got for Tyreek Hill?
If that was the return, I probably would feel differently. If the return that they had for Tyreek Hill was on the table whenever Chris Jones was signing his deal, yes, I would feel differently about that. I don't think that would be a realistic return at that time.
DeForest Buckner brought back two first-round picks, didn't he?
DeForest Buckner is one of the guys that's pretty consistently trying to – remember where he was at that time.
He was all with pro the 49ers.
One, all pro two, all pro first team, all pro second team.
In 18, he had 12 sacks. In 18, when Chris Jones turned down the first offer, he had 15.5. In 19, DeForest Buckner had 7.5 sacks. In 19, after which Chris Jones would sign his contract, he had 9.
I don't know if that was on the table for the Chiefs.
And it wasn't two firsts. I traded by the 49ers.
Was it two first-round picks?
No, it was one first-round pick. Nope, 13 overall. One first-round pick.
Is that all, though? That's the only pick they got in that deal, right?
Yeah, and it was used to draft Yeah, it looks like he got moved again, and then it went for Tristan Wirfs, who's been pretty good for the Bucs. You know, that's and then you also open up, you put a guy in at $3 million instead of a guy at $20 million into your cap, and you have $17 million more to spend. Listen, that's the lesson. I have no problem with the fact that Chris Jones is here. I mean, we don't need to redocument what I've said for 3 years. I think the time to move him was before 19, when he first turned things down. And I think that's the lesson that the Chiefs learned from the Chris Jones deal, is that the time to do it is not when you're up against it. It's when you have 1 year left. And that's where the Chiefs were with Tyreek Hill. 2 years left on his deal. He wanted the extension. He was going to hold out. Or 1 year left on his deal. He wanted the extension. He was going to hold out. They said, okay, we're going to send you packing. Now, Chris Jones didn't hold out. He played. But I think since that time with Chris Jones, now the new MO is you want that extension, you're going to hold out if you're not going to get it. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Chiefs moved Tyreek Hill. And I just, you know, I think from a team building standpoint, they won a championship. And so just as Frank Clark's deal is never going to, you know, in and of itself, it's not been a good deal, but it helped add up to a championship. So it's not going to be hated the way other contracts have been hated in this town. Chris Jones' deal will never be thought of as a negative. But I firmly believe, and I think it's hard to do, particularly when a guy's 25 years old, when you're talking about him, but it's hard for people to say, well, let's not sign this guy. But I'm going to tell you that there is no one on this roster should be the highest paid guy at their position except Patrick Mahomes. And what makes it work with Patrick Mahomes making that kind of money is to make sure that nobody else makes that kind of money. That's the best way to put the best 52 guys around Patrick Mahomes, is to trade those guys for draft picks. Count on your ability to draft well, to manage the cap well, and you'll be a better team in the long haul. And I ask it every time it comes up. I asked it about Justin Houston. I said, if he does this moving forward, will you be happy? And everybody said no. And then I said, okay, that's what Derek Thomas did after his 20-sack season. I put it out there. If he does, I put the same numbers. If he does what Derek Thomas did after his 20-sack season, after his 15.5-sack season, will you be happy with the new contract with Chris Jones? Everybody said no. Well, since then, he hasn't been as good. 9 sacks, 7.5 sacks, 9 sacks. Like, after the fact, everybody is ready to talk about, like, oh, he's been disappointing. Well, there was at least one fat ass with a microphone who told you this is coming.
I think that, first of all, I agree that's the way the Chiefs are going to have to operate moving forward. I also think that this offseason they've shown that it is how they're going to operate moving forward. I mean, it's not just moving on from Tyreek Hill. If you look at the three biggest Chiefs moves of this offseason, let's say the three biggest decisions of this offseason, I think you would say trading Tyreek Hill, clear cut number one. I think you would say not giving Orlando Brown a long-term contract and just sticking him on the franchise tag and staying on that position would be number two. I also think you would say not offering Tyrann Mathieu a contract would be number three. All three of those decisions result in the same conclusion, which is not giving a player the bag. And therefore, I think they've shown that it's not just, you know, the decisions of this offseason. You can couple those together and say, this is how this team is going to operate over the longevity of this Patrick Mahomes contract, which is, I mean, that is the difference, right, between the Chris Jones situation a couple of years ago and the Tyreek Hill situation this offseason, is they were able to get some of those Chris Jones years out of the way before the full weight of that Patrick Mahomes contract kicks in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And listen, I I'm not screaming mad or saying they won a Super Bowl at a time, you know, putting everything into winning that first one is big. I would disagree that they should have immediately pivoted from that, and they should have moved Chris Jones. Now, I don't know that it would have been possible in the midst of a pandemic. I don't know that anybody else was willing to give signing bonuses. I think the market did dry up. And to be clear, I would have done it the year before. Maybe they don't win the Super Bowl. Maybe him batting those passes down, he's not there. Maybe they don't win that championship without him. I'm entirely open to it. I'd always play the math of the game. And, you know, they added up to a championship and another conference championship. And so there's no way that you can view the Chris Jones deal as a loser, right?
Right.
It's team success is what measures it. It's been a success. But I think, as you know, the important thing is moving forward. And I think you're right. I think they have adopted that. I think they turned the corner with how it got expensive. And I think that's why this year, I hope Chris Jones is planning on having a big year because I think it's basically a contract year for him. If he doesn't have a big year, there's no reason to have a $27 million cap hit when you can cut him for seven and save $20 million or trade him for seven, which is what I hope happens. I hope Chris Jones has 15 and a half sacks again or 25 sacks and sets a new record, and then the Chiefs trade him at age 28 going into his age 29 season for a first-round pick and then some and count on being able to draft and find good talent and move forward. I think that's what they will need to do because I think probably at the end of this year he's going to want an extension. And it's better for somebody else to reset the defensive tackle market with a guy who's now going to be entering his third contract and 29 years old. It gets a little bit different. I think there's a decent chance this is Chris Jones' last year in a Chiefs uniform. Decent. I won't say definite because interior defensive linemen can play well into their low 30s, but you're starting to get on borrowed time. I think they'll take a long, hard look, and they would listen if somebody comes calling for Chris Jones. And I think Chris Jones has already proven the contract's important. I think if he has a big year, he's going to want a new deal. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, let's take that a step further, Sharon, because I think that the other piece of this equation is going to be the team success. Obviously, we entered a new era of building this roster when Patrick Mahomes' contract kicked in. Like, that part's obvious. But after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, they literally adopted this phrase, run it back, because they wanted to try and keep the whole band together. They did the opposite this offseason. So you wonder how much, you know, of the team success is going to play into the pressure to keep the group that won. Let's say they win the Super Bowl this year. What's going to be the pressure to try and keep that group together, and how much is that going to play a factor in, you know, with a guy like Chris Jones, let's say, has a big year individually, and how much of it's actually persuaded by the team success? And, you know, let's say the Chiefs win 14 games this year. They win a Super Bowl. I think there's going to be more pressure to keep the group together than there would be if they had the season like they did these last two seasons and they came up just short.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, it's amazing how fast those contracts go, isn't it? There's another year, but it's only a four-year deal, and I think he'll want a new deal with that extra year. All right, let's take a break. One more with Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, Corona Hard Seltzers. You got one more trip to the beach. Make sure you stock up on the Coronas, those hard seltzers. Lower carbs, lower sugars. You can get them right now. Four great flavors. Get them wherever you buy your Coronas. The Corona Hard Seltzer is just waiting for you. Great thing to take out to the ballpark as well. If you're going to be doing a little tailgating, stock up on your Coronas tonight to head out to the ballpark. Wrapping things up here with Sam McDowell. Sam, you got a camp darling. You know, you got a Jesse Haynes, a Brian, who is the Emporia State running back?
Brian Shea.
Brian Shea, Bobby Scipio. Got a camp darling for us so far?
I actually really like Josh Williams, the fourth rounder out of a D2 program. So I think Josh Williams is going to be the guy that has a future here for a while.
Anybody further off the radar than a guy who was drafted this year?
Okay, so he's got to be like what, worse than a fourth round pick? Give me all the qualifications for that.
Somebody nobody's heard of before you just said his name.
Somebody that nobody has heard of before?
Yeah, for the most part, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You know, like last year, Devin Key was that guy for me, and then he did not even make the roster. In fact, he got so badly exposed in the first preseason game that we never saw him run another play with the ones again. I don't know if this fits your qualifications, although he was a seventh-round pick, but the Blue Springs High School grad, Elijah Lee, I think is also going to play a lot more than people anticipate.
Okay.
Because
his
first 5 years in the league, that guy was primarily a special teams player. He's bounced around to, I think, four different teams now. But I think he's going to play because his strength as a linebacker is in coverage.
Okay. Sam, you're the man. We appreciate it, my friend. We'll let you get back to glorious St. Joe and enjoy your time up there.
Awesome. Another way to appreciate it. You got to enjoy it.
Okay, Sam McDowell with the Kansas City Star, brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzers. We will take a break when we come back here in the program. We're going to go around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories, where they are happening. The two-minute drill is coming up next. We will, of course, find out what's going on in St. Louis with the Cardinals. They are red hot. How close were they to getting Juan Soto? We'll go to Charlotte, talk about the Carolina Panthers quarterback battle. Also look ahead to UNC, Clemson. What are the expectations for those two programs? Any news from the ACC about being carved up in the expansion of the SEC or the Big Ten? All coming your way next.
All right, two players have been named to 14 straight Pro Bowls. Name either one. Brought to you by Good Sense.